From the American Association of Nurse Practitioners, I'm your host, Nurse Practitioner and Director of Education, Eve Roberts. And this is NP Pulse, the voice of the nurse practitioner. Welcome to NP Pulse, AMP's monthly podcast bringing unique nurse practitioner voices and expertise on issues that matter to NPs and our patients. As always, be sure to subscribe to this podcast, share with your colleagues, and check back each month for new conversations with nurse practitioners and healthcare leaders from across the nation. According to the American Cancer Society, ovarian cancer is the fifth leading cancer diagnosis causing death in women, and it accounts for more deaths than any other cancer of the female reproductive system. On this podcast, we are joined by nurse practitioners Lauren Mann and Sarah Rossi to talk about ovarian cancer. I'm excited to announce that NP Pulse podcast listeners may claim CE credit for this program through April 2025. After you listen to the podcast, simply go to amp.org/CE Center, register for this activity, then complete the post-test and evaluation. This podcast was developed and funded by AAMP. Sarah Rossi graduated from nursing school in 2005 from Binghamton University. Following graduation, she worked in the medical ICU at Upstate Medical University in Syracuse, New York. She went on to complete the Family Nurse Practitioner program at Binghamton University and graduated in 2009. Sarah joined the University of Rochester Medical Center in 2009 and has been with the GYN Oncology Division since June 2018. She sees patients in both outpatient and inpatient settings and is also an RNFA and first assist in the OR. Lauren Mann attended Binghamton University for her master's degree as a family nurse practitioner. Lauren has been with the University of Rochester Medical Center and the GYN Oncology Department for over 5 years, and she considers taking care of these resilient women fighting GYN cancer to truly be an honor. She also performs the genetic testing at her clinic and has presented to a Lynch syndrome support group about GYN screening in patients with Lynch syndrome. It is my absolute pleasure to welcome our experts, Lauren Mann and Sarah Rossi.
Thank you, Eve, for having us today. Lauren and I have been excited to do this podcast. Ovarian cancer accounts for more deaths than any other cancer of the female reproductive system. The 5-year survival rate for ovarian cancer is 50.8%. The estimated new cases in 2023 was 19,710, and the estimated deaths from ovarian cancer was 13,270. Hearing these statistics certainly is alarming and can often lead to the question if there's anything we can do for screening. Screening for ovarian cancer starts with obtaining a family history of patients to see if they are high versus average risk for ovarian cancer. In average risk women, there unfortunately is no evidence that supports the benefit of screening for ovarian cancer with imaging and blood work. This screening has not been shown to reduce mortality, and this leads to increased rate of false positive tests and a risk of harm from invasive testing. The best thing to do for screening is to educate patients on signs and symptoms. Should they have any of these signs and symptoms, to notify their provider so that they can get in and be evaluated. Unfortunately, ovarian cancer usually causes symptoms after the disease has already spread. Symptoms are often vague and include abdominal bloating, pelvic and/or abdominal pain, decrease in appetite, unexplained weight loss, urinary urgency and frequency, fatigue, dyspareunia, changes in bowel habits, particularly constipation, and irregular menses. Some symptoms of ovarian cancer are more acute and often are associated with advanced disease. These symptoms require urgent management and include ascites, which is a result of tumor cells produce fluid in the abdomen and can be seen on a CT scan. This can cause abdominal bloating and discomfort. Another symptom can be pleural effusion, which is caused by fluid buildup in the lungs from tumor cells. Often patients will report shortness of breath and have diminished breath sounds on exam. This can be seen on chest X-ray and also chest CT. Another symptom can be bowel obstruction. Symptoms may be severe nausea and/or vomiting, constipation, lack of passing flatus, and can be diagnosed on CT or abdominal x-ray. Lastly, venous thromboembolism is another symptom. Cancer patients are at increased risk for DVTs. In patients who present with an unprovoked DVT and/or PE, a workup for malignancy is warranted. Lauren, can you talk about how to start an initial workup for a patient suspected to have ovarian cancer?
Absolutely. For a patient who presents for a suspected ovarian cancer, it is very important to obtain a comprehensive family history, looking for other cancers and a family history of ovarian cancer, to evaluate their nutrition and functional status, perform a thorough abdominal and pelvic exam, obtain lab work, and imaging. Sarah, can you talk about which labs should be ordered?
Absolutely. A CBC and CMP should be collected as part of your basic workup. However, it is important to also check a CA125 level. CA125 is a large glycoprotein and is detected in serum, with a normal range being 0 to 35. This is the most widely used biomarker for ovarian cancer. Up to 85% of patients with ovarian cancer will have an elevated CA125. However, it is also important to note that CA125 is not perfect for detecting ovarian cancer and can be elevated due to other causes, including premenopausal status, menstruation, and in people who smoke cigarettes. HE4 is another approved lab by the FDA for monitoring of recurrent or progressive disease in patients with ovarian cancer, and it can be very useful in detecting disease recurrence in patients who did not have an elevated CA125 at the time they were diagnosed with ovarian cancer. HE4 is an antigen derived from the human epididymis protein and is detected in serum. Normal range is 0 to 140. Like CA125, HE4 can be impacted by factors other than cancer. This can be elevated in pregnancy and in postmenopausal women. It also can be impacted if a patient is dehydrated or have altered renal function. The risk of malignancy algorithm, also referred to as ROMA score, uses CA125 and HE4 and menopausal status. The score is interpreted based on menopausal status. In premenopausal patients, high risk of malignancy is greater than or equal to 13.1%. And in postmenopausal patients, high risk of malignancy is greater than or equal to 27.7%. If CA125 level is elevated or a patient has an elevated ROMA score, a patient has symptoms concerning for ovarian cancer, imaging should also be included as part of your workup. Lauren, can you talk about types of imaging and indications for ordering?
Imaging is a crucial part of a patient's initial workup. Depending on the patient's symptoms and exam findings, you can order an abdominal ultrasound or an abdominal and pelvic CT. The following are findings that are suspicious for ovarian cancer. Like Sarah discussed earlier, ascites is a common finding in women with ovarian cancer, which is fluid in the abdomen caused by cancer cells. This can be drained with a paracentesis, and cytology can be sent of the fluid for diagnosis confirmation. There can also be a solid adnexal mass seen on CT or ultrasound that is not hyperechoic. It is often reported as nodular or papillary. On ultrasound, it has irregular thick septations with a solid component. Ordering an ultrasound or CT-guided biopsy of the mass is not recommended due to risk for rupture for this mass. A pleural effusion can also be found on chest imaging if a patient is symptomatic or to assess if there are distant metastases. A thoracentesis can be done to provide symptom relief and can be diagnostic. This can be done with either interventional radiology or in the ER. It is important to order a medical cytology for these patients when placing the order for thoracentesis for disease confirmation, similar to when ordering a paracentesis. Peritoneal carcinomatosis can also be seen on CT scan. This is reported as nodules, masses, or thickening in the peritoneal cavity. There is also reports of lymphadenopathy that can be seen on CT, and this is when lymph nodes are enlarged, indicating that cancer has spread to the lymph nodes. The cutoff for lymph node enlargement is the short axis measuring 1 centimeter. CT scans do not always pick this up, however. There can also be lesions on different organ systems depending on if the ovarian cancer has spread. Masses on different organs can show up on CT scan. If there are unclear findings on CT scan, the next recommendation is for PET CT. PET CT scans can show lymph node enlargement better than CT scans, but the problem with PET CTs is that insurance typically does not cover this. If a PET CT is warranted and the insurance company does not approve this, the best thing to do is do a peer-to-peer so that your patient can get the necessary imaging.
Thanks, Lauren. Imaging provides a lot of information to providers and can help with next steps of diagnosis. It is important to refer patients identified as high risk to a gynecologic oncologist to confirm diagnosis. Lauren, can you talk about how to identify and screen high-risk patients?
Absolutely. It's important to screen patients who have specific risk factors that can increase their risk of developing ovarian cancer. These factors include aging. Half of women with ovarian cancer are over the age of 63. Women who take hormone replacement. Using estrogen alone or with progesterone after menopause increases the risk of cancer compared to women who did not use hormone replacement therapy. Other factors include smoking, germline genetic mutations, which we will get to in just a second, also relatives with ovarian cancer, never being pregnant, and being overweight. Sarah, can you talk about any factors that reduce the risk of ovarian cancer?
Of course. A bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy, where a surgeon removes the patient's ovaries and fallopian tubes, is utilized in women for germline mutations to reduce the risk of development of ovarian cancer. This is also done for other diagnoses other than ovarian cancer. The use of OCPs can also reduce the risk of ovarian cancer. And those who have only used OCPs versus those who never used OCPs showed more than 50% reduction among patients with over 10 years of use. There is no data regarding rings and patches for contraception, and IUDs have conflicting data. Another factor that can reduce the risk of ovarian cancer is giving birth. Those who have given birth have a reduced risk of ovarian cancer, and studies have shown that each additional birth is associated with a further 10 to 20% risk reduction. Breastfeeding has had conflicting evidence, although some analyses have reported that there is risk reduction, and some studies have found that there is not a statistically significant reduction in risk. Lauren, can you discuss the germline mutation risk factor in regards to ovarian cancer?
Yes, thank you, Sarah. The lifetime ovarian cancer risk in the general population is about 1.3%, but 18% of ovarian cancers are associated with a germline mutation, and this is a genetic mutation that has been passed down in the patient's family. The BRCA1 germline mutation increases the lifetime ovarian cancer risk to 35 to 70%, which is significantly increased when we look at the general population risk of about 1.3%. The BRCA2 gene mutation increases the risk to 10 to 30%. These genetic mutations are 10 times more common in the Ashkenazi Jewish community, so it is essential to screen your patients who are at high risk. Anyone who has a history of ovarian cancer or a family history of ovarian cancer is eligible for genetic testing to see if they have a germline mutation that increases their risk. This also includes fallopian tube and primary peritoneal cancer. Family history means a first or second degree blood relative, and this germline testing is performed by blood, saliva, or buccal swab. Germline mutations for ovarian cancer can also increase the risk of male and female breast cancer and prostate cancer. So this screening should not be limited to women, and male patients should also be screened for family history. Not only is screening for family history of ovarian cancer important, but also other cancers. Any personal or family history of male breast cancer in women at the age of 50 or younger, or more than 3 family members with breast cancer on the same side are eligible for genetic testing. A family history of prostate cancer in 3 members on the same side or a family history of pancreatic cancer at any age should also undergo genetic testing. Once you have identified that a patient is at high risk for ovarian cancer, it is important to refer them for this genetic testing. Each state has different regulations for this, so please abide by your state rules. If your patient declines referral for genetic testing, it is important to educate them to share this information with their family in case their family members would like to undergo genetic testing.
Lauren, are there any other germline mutations that can increase the risk of ovarian cancer?
Yes, thank you, Sarah. Lynch syndrome is a group of four genes that can increase the risk of ovarian cancer above the general population of 1.3%. For the MLH1 gene in Lynch syndrome, the cumulative risk of a diagnosis of ovarian cancer through the age of 80 is between 4 to 20%. The MSH2 cumulative risk for the diagnosis of ovarian cancer through the age of 80 is 8 to 38%. The MSH6 cumulative risk is less than or equal to 1 to 13%, and the PMS2 cumulative risk is 1.3 to 3%. To screen patients who may have Lynch syndrome, it's again important to look at their personal and family cancer history. You should screen for patients and family members with a uterine or colon cancer less than 50 years old or greater than two family members on the same side with a Lynch syndrome cancer. And these cancers include uterine, stomach, colorectal, liver, kidney and bladder, and brain cancer. There are a few other genes that can increase the risk of ovarian cancer as well. The ATM genetic mutation's absolute ovarian cancer risk is 2 to 3%. This gene can also increase the risk of breast, prostate, and pancreatic cancer. So again, it's essential to screen for family histories concerning for any of these cancers. The BRIP1 genetic mutation has an absolute ovarian cancer risk of 5 to 15%. There is some data that shows this can increase the risk of breast cancer as well. So again, essential to do a full comprehensive family history. The PALB2 absolute ovarian cancer risk is 3 to 5%. This can also increase the risk of male and female breast cancer and pancreatic cancer when you're looking for family history. The RAD51C gene's absolute risk of developing an ovarian cancer is 10 to 30%. This genetic mutation can also increase the risk of breast cancer when screening for family history. The RAD51D genetic mutation's absolute risk of ovarian cancer is 10 to 20%, and this mutation can increase the risk of breast cancer as well. Once a patient screens positive for a germline mutation that increases the risk of an ovarian cancer, it's important to refer them to a GYN oncologist for management of their ovarian cancer risk. Recommendations for a risk-reducing bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy between the ages of 35 to 40 is recommended for anyone who screens positive for BRCA1 gene mutation, taking into consideration their childbearing status. BRCA2 patients can delay their risk reduction surgery of the bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy until the ages of 40 to 45, unless the age of diagnosis in their family history warrants an earlier age. For Lynch syndrome and the ATM genetic mutation, the risk reduction timing of their bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy is individualized to the family history of onset of ovarian cancer, if any, and upon completion of their childbearing. For the BRIP1, PALB2, RAD51C, and RAD51D, recommendations are to consider a risk reduction of bilateral salpingo-oophorectomy around the age of 45 to 50 years old. It's also important to counsel patients regarding reproductive desires, menopausal symptoms, hormone replacement, and related medical issues that can come about from this risk reduction surgery. There are clinical trials evaluating just a salpingectomy without oophorectomy, but at this time, this is not the standard of care.
Thank you, Lauren. In conclusion, the symptoms of ovarian cancer can be vague, so it's important to be on alert for ovarian cancer when these symptoms present, especially in patients who have risk factors that increase their risk of developing ovarian cancer. It's also essential in obtaining detailed family history to screen those that would be eligible for genetic testing and potentially prevent ovarian cancer from happening in those with an increased risk based on their genetic makeup.
Thank you, Sarah. I completely agree, and I think it's so important to screen any patient with a high risk for ovarian cancer. I'd also like to thank AANP for this opportunity to present, and thank you to everyone who listened.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren and Sarah. It's been a pleasure listening to you and gaining your perspective and insights on this important topic. To our listeners, I hope you found this episode educational and can apply some of what was discussed to your practice. Join AANP, your national professional association, and add your voice to that of more than 120,000 NPs nationwide. Membership gives you access to so many benefits, including tools and resources for your practice, and the AANP CE Center, which offers a comprehensive library of CE activities for NPs of all specialties and experience levels. Exclusive discounts and many free activities are yours as an AANP member to help you complete state licensure requirements and earn the credits needed for recertification. I urge you to become an AANP member today. You can earn CE credit for today's podcast by visiting aanp.org/CE Center and entering Ovarian Cancer 24 in the code prompt. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, share with your colleagues, and check back each month for new episodes. And thank you for listening.